full of too many football podcasts, comes another football podcast. One man's quest to find the answers.
Okay, boys, let's go to work.
Now, live from Pine Grove Studio B, it's Let Me Be Frank with T. Frank.
Got a fun show for you today here on Let Me Be Frank because we're looking at both sides of the Penn State football roster. We're going to be looking at the guys that are going to make an impact in 2021, the guys that PFF has their eye on. We're talking to host of the 2-for-1 Drafts podcast, director of content for PFF, and all-around good guy, Austin Gale. He's coming up in just a little bit. Right now, though, we're looking at the other end of the roster. Guys that aren't on the depth chart right now that you've been looking at. Not the ones that are going to see the field most likely, but guys that might be the next wave of great players for Penn State. We're talking about the deep sleepers on the roster. And no better time than the present to look at those guys in the future. And these are the guys that I have my eye on as far as they have high-end potential and are going to have an opportunity at some point to showcase that. The question we have to ask ourselves before we get started is, did T. Frank make this entire thing up just so we could talk about Keziah Holmes? Maybe. But hear me out, this is why. I think Holmes has the best combination of skills in the backfield. I think when you look at his ability to play through contact, great contact balance, his speed, and the pairing with the new outside zone system that Mike Yurcich is going to be running at Penn State, that's a great combination of skills. Getting this guy in space and having him the opportunity to break tackles like he did here, I think is going to be a huge benefit for the Nittany Lions. I think he's got good vision, and as you can see, there's a natural ability to break tackles. It's not a forcible thing for him. It's just about consistently getting those things out of him. As a true freshman, I think these highlights show the high end of what he can be, getting a little more speed, a little more maturity. He's 210 pounds right now, so he's already big enough to be a good running back. It's just about accentuating all those skills and bringing it out on a consistent basis. Consistency, by the way, is what James Franklin talked about, what he wants from his running backs in 2021 in that very young group of players. And when you look at Keziah Holmes, you know what you're getting from Kevon Lee and from Noah Kane. They have a very defined skill set. They are the consistent ones. But can you get more? I'm always looking for more. I'm always looking for the complete guy with the strength, the speed, the natural abilities to break tackles. That's what Keziah Holmes brings to the table as long as you can get that out of him. And he's going to have the opportunity to be a part of the rotation. He's just got to make sure that when he has the opportunity, he makes the most of it. So another guy we're going to move on to that is going to see the field in 2021. Bit of a cheat here because he's in the two deep, but he has the potential to break out and be a star, is Smith Vilbert, the defensive end for the Nittany Lions. And you can see why he's got all this potential, because he's super long, great frame, quickness, you know, good speed. And it's not just the size, he's already realized on that potential at 260 pounds this spring. So it's just about learning to play the position, learning to finish plays like this. And I think an underrated thing is not being so damn lerpy. With those long arms and that gangly frame, learning to consistently use his hands, keep his arms inside, and play with power. Because if he does that, again, he's the high-end variance on the depth chart behind Nick Tarburton, who is your consistent power run-stuffing defensive end that used to play linebacker. So he's a good run defender, understands the concepts that are coming at him. He's going to be a high-floor player. Vilbert is the guy that if he breaks out, Penn State once again has a 6'6", 260-pound, strong defensive end that can play the run and get after the passer. That's what he can bring to the table. So as a deep sleeping star, I'd say how he fits onto this list, because he's going to see the field. But if Penn State wants to have somebody step up, we already highlighted Nick Tarburton as the guy that needs to step up and play well. The guy who can really break things open for Penn State is Smith Vilbert. So after those first two, we're going to transition down the depth chart at a different position to a guy that I'm not expecting to see in 2021 a whole lot, and that is Kaziah Izzard, the defensive tackle. I love his fluidity. I love his pass rushing skills as a former defensive end in high school who's got good quickness. He played in space well for a big man, so you know he's got those skills to bring to the inside. It's just learning to play defensive tackle, seeing consistent double teams, guys that are bigger and stronger than him. My question would be, is his frame maxed out? Because you can see he's already a thick-bodied kid in high school 2 years ago. Does he have room to get up to 300 pounds? He's 290 on the depth chart right now. He's 285 in the clips you're seeing. So he's close, but it's does he have that complete profile? But it's close enough that I think the pass rushing skills he can bring eventually, once he learns how to play with leverage and play on the edges of tackles and not in space, I think that stuff gets that's what gets me excited about a defensive tackle. Is he can be that complete complement to the pass rush while also being a quality run defender. And you can see the way he takes on blocks and his ability to play with leverage, those are all huge benefits. Saw him a little bit at the end of the season. He was in the Illinois game, played reasonably well, but we're not going to make any assumptions on 12 total snaps. So we're going to put a pin in that. I don't think you're going to see him in 2021 because the decision to bring in Derek Tangelo and play that three technique position kind of tells you what Penn State thinks about where he is in his development process. He'll get there eventually if he can. I think he physically can get there eventually. It's just going to be whether it's midway through this season, at the end of the season, or heading into 2022. Now, speaking of a guy in 2022 who's going to have an opportunity but likely has no path to the field right now is former four-star safety Enzo Jennings. And you can see on film why he is such a potential laden player. Look at the size and the length and the strength he has. And again, the guys we're talking about here, these are physical presences that we don't know a whole lot about their game so far. But as he profiles, he's got great speed and closing ability on the football, and he shows enough coverage ability. You can see there's enough in coverage here that you think he can play there, and he's got the speed to do it. But if you look at, this is highlight tape, and we're relying a lot on highlight tape from high school, you don't see a lot of coverage plays. So the question is, can he play in coverage? And because we don't know those answers, he clearly is body type and play style a boundary safety and not a field safety. And that's why he doesn't have a path to the field right now, because Jaquan Brisker and Jonathan Sutherland are clearly the guys that are going to be taking snaps at that position, and Enzo Jennings would be third behind those guys for the future. But when he gets there, I think Jaquan Brisker is actually a pretty good comparison as far as physical abilities and tools and the nastiness in the box to come up and make tackles. So in the future, I think Penn State has a good option at that boundary safety, but they're looking for somebody to play field safety right now, and I don't think that Jennings has the profile to do that, so we're going to be waiting on him. But when his time comes, he might start a run of really good safety play for the Nittany Lions at that boundary safety. The final guy we're going to talk about right now, I will never not be intrigued by 6'4", now at this point in his Penn State career, 200 pounds, and runs like a literal deer. Malik Mega, the receiver from Canada, he's captured my imagination in a lot of ways, watching his highlights from high school and what he could be with teaching and learning the American game of football. Because unlike Sutherland and the other Canadians that we've talked about, Jesse Luceda or Christian Vaillou, he did not transfer to an American school before coming to Penn State. He spent no time playing American football. And for his position in particular, you can see you're allowed to move before the snap. All the false start penalties, all those don't count in Canadian football. So can he learn to play on the boundary, which is where he's going to play with that size and that speed profile? Can he learn to play on the boundary, get off press coverage, and use this size and speed that he has? Because I love watching these highlights, and it's not just the size and speed. You can see there, I think he does have good change of direction and movement skills for somebody who's 6'4". The question is, can he take that quick change of direction and movement in his hips, and can he make it more explosive and efficient? Taylor Stubblefield, we've all heard, is a technician of a coach, And if he can bring out those skills in Malik Mega, you're talking about a number one boundary receiver with every tool imaginable. And that's why he's on the Penn State roster, not about his skills right now, but what he could be. There's still a lot of questions about those things. And then how is he at the catch point? What's his vertical like? Does he play with that the ball is mine mentality? Those are the things that are going to make and break a great receiver. But as far as a lottery ticket that you have on your roster, I'm not a gambling man, but I would put my money down most times on a guy like Malik Mega. So those are your five deep sleepers. Yeah, some of them, they're maybe just napping on the Penn State roster.
This is Let Me Be Frank.
Welcome back to Pine Grove Studio B, and help me welcome the host of the 2-for-1 Drafts podcast, director of content at PFF, all-around good guy, and man I owe a beer to, Austin Gale. Austin, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
I should also add Mission Impossible era Henry Cavill stand-in. The mustache is fantastic, I have to say.
I appreciate that.
So we're talking about, we'll get right to it, because Penn State football fans want to know about Penn State football. So we're going to look at a couple of guys for 2021 that PFF has their eye on. Is there anyone that you want to throw out right away, or do you want me to start asking you about guys that I have on my list?
I do think the most interesting player that I've like watched closely doing large parts of the game he had against Sean Wade is Jahan Dotson. I do know some people see him as a top 10 receiver in the 2022 NFL draft. I've watched him a bit. I think he came on really strong this past season. I want to see more of it. I know he's a little bit of an older player, so I'm interested to see, you know, how much he progresses and moves forward with Penn State. But I think Jahan Dotson is probably the biggest name I've already looked at a decent amount coming out of Penn State.
He feels very slept on. That was one of the biggest things that he talked about last year, was that even after the season coming on strong at the end of the year, I think was third team all Big Ten. What is the area or the metric that you think he can stand to improve the most on to have that standout sort of season you're talking about?
I do think it's separation, because I think where he showed up a lot was just in the contested catchability, ball skills, that type of stuff looked good. I want to see more consistent separation at and away from the line of scrimmage. I think a lot of that's more one-on-one opportunities. Didn't see a ton of those this past season. Sean Wade was kind of his best competition. And where he won was at the catch point. And I think winning at the catch point is great. And you look for that in wide receivers. You look for that in guys like Rashad Bateman, Jamar Chase, guys that do a really, really good job of winning at the catch point. You want to see that, but you also want to see this next level of separation, especially on the short intermediate routes. It's very difficult to create separation quickly at the collegiate level and in the NFL. So when you are evaluating a wide receiver, when you can create separation in the red zone, on short, you know, short yardage situations, on these quick hitting routes, 5 to 10 yards down the football field, that is what stands out to me in terms of being that versatile receiver in the NFL.
And it's surprising too, given his little bit undersized stature, that he has the kind of inverse of what you expect from his profile with the contested catches and not being as great at the underneath separation. How much of that plays into, from a production standpoint, what Sean Clifford is bringing to the table? How does that inform what you can see and can't see from Jahan Dotson?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously room for improvement for Clifford. I do think you want to see him be more consistently accurate, push the ball downfield even a little bit more. I think it's an opportunity for Clifford as well. I think that's where you'll start to see the players around him start to have more success. It's very difficult to rank highly in advanced metrics or PFF receiving grade if your quarterback is not consistently putting the ball on target, because so much of that is opportunity. You know, getting accurate targets leads to production. And obviously you can overcome some of that and have really good, you know, a really good catch radius and those types of things. But Dotson is never really going to be obviously a catch radius guy. 5'11", 182 pounds, going to be more of a guy that I don't necessarily think he has to pigeonhole himself in the slot, play a ton of outside receiver this past season, but smaller guy, you know, inaccurate quarterbacks, it's going to be difficult for them to really meet their maximum box score or production potential. So wanting to see, you know, more accurate targets and specifically more downfield targets as well.
And we'll get to Sean Clifford in just a little bit when we sort of shift gears from individual guys to the team itself. Penn State's highest returning graded player, Jaquan Brisker. I did a little bit of research because I was curious as to where he might fit in the 2022 NFL draft. And looking back on it, there is only one true safety that's been drafted in the first round of the last three seasons. If you take out Isaiah Simmons, who plays linebacker for the Cardinals, and the Raiders going full John Gruden by selecting a box safety in the first round, you leave just Darnell Savage as the only first round safety in the last 3 years. Does Brisker have the skills that the NFL is looking for to sneak into the end of the first round if he does have a good 2021?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he has good size, 6'11", 212. I think there's he graded really well. He's a really good tackler. There's a lot of reasons to like him. I think I've seen him on a lot of 2022 draft lists, like guys that people want to see more of him. I think you want, former two-sport athlete, I believe in high school is what Brisker was. And I think to see how good he is as a tackler so early, I think is very encouraging. He also played wide receiver in high school for the most part. So he's still, in a lot of ways, I think learning the defensive side of the ball and learning a lot of those things, and to be as good as he is already, only two missed tackles last year, only two missed tackles in over 50 attempts is really, really good for a safety with what? Only, 2 years of experience at Penn State, not playing the position a ton. So I do think you have to get excited what you've seen so far. Where there's opportunity for improvement potentially is more passes defense, more hands on the ball, more ball production at the safety position. But that comes less with athleticism and less with some of these other things, as much as it's just reps and experience. Like, he does not have that level of experience or that level of instinct so far. At least you've seen signs of it, but you want to see that improve in 2021 for him to really elevate his status.
So he moved to the boundary safety in 2021 or 2020, had a better year. You saw a little more ball production, and he does have that position at that boundary safety to kind of stuff the stat sheet and to make those plays in a lot of single high situations. Another guy that has switched positions this offseason, I want to skip ahead to Brandon Smith, because this has been something that I know PFF's talked a little bit about here and there in the offseason. He's switching from Sam to Will linebacker. But in general, is it possible for linebackers to be difference makers anymore in college or in the NFL?
I think so. I mean, especially in college, I mean, you can have difference making linebackers because of how much a priority running the football is at college. Like, there are still college offenses that run the football a ton and want to, quote unquote, establish the run. And I think having linebackers that can be consistently around the football, consistently make tackles, like Micah Parsons was a legitimate impact linebacker at Penn State.
They're kind of screwed without him last year. So yeah,
I think, obviously opted out in 2020, but with 2019, like, you saw a difference maker. That Memphis game was probably the first game that every single NFL coach or NFL evaluator watched with Micah Parsons. And you saw what game changing ability at that position can do at the collegiate level. Cause it doesn't always show up in coverage, and it can show up as a pass rusher when given those opportunities. And Micah Parsons, arguably the best pass rusher in this past year's class, but in coverage, it's very difficult. Devin White, one of the most athletic, freaky linebackers in this draft class, gave up over 900 yards in coverage last year, was targeted over 120 times in coverage and gave up a lot of yardage because it's a very hard position to play in coverage. You look at PFF's linebacker rankings in the NFL that came out today. Number one, Bobby Wagner. Eric Kendricks is up there. Fred Warner, Deion Jones, Darius Leonard. But after that, it does tail off significantly in terms of which linebackers in the NFL can actually show up on passing downs and be impact players. You are put in a very hard position to succeed at off-ball linebacker in today's NFL, where no one is running 12 personnel anymore. And the 11 personnel is loaded with Travis Kelce's and Darren Waller's, guys that are legitimately wide receivers. Like, before, linebackers, the reason for the position when these guys were, 6'3", 6'4", 250 pounds, was to be that second line of defense against the run and play big boy bully ball against the tight ends when you have to. Now, linebackers have to cover slot receivers. Linebackers have to cover tight ends like Darren Waller and Travis Kelce. Linebackers are getting smaller. I've talked to multiple linebackers in this past year's draft class where coaches were telling them or teams were telling them, hey, we don't care if you get down to 220, 215. Like, playing linebacker 215 and 220 10 years ago would have been insane. But now the position's changing. Every team is pretty much just trying to have like six safeties on the football field so you can do anything.
Yeah, and that's why Parsons in particular, interesting at 240, and Brandon Smith, another guy we're bringing up here, also 240 plus. So these are bigger guys at the position. I'm astounded by the amount of space RPOs create on the field. And that's another reason why I was curious your thoughts about that, because even in those situations, it feels like linebackers just sometimes it's physically impossible to be right. With Brandon Smith in particular, what are the areas you think he needs to get better at? Because this is a former five-star guy with a ton of physical talent that hasn't realized a lot of that yet. I think Penn State fans are looking for the position switch to help with that. But what are some areas you think that he can improve on to make a big leap in 2021?
Yeah, Brandon Smith, former five-star, and he's been big for a long time. I mean, when he was coming out of high school, he was 6'4", 225, 230. He is a big dude, could probably continue to add weight if he wanted to. But again, we just talked about the linebacker position is getting smaller. You don't need these big guys as much anymore. If you're going to get that big, if you're going to be 245, 250, need to be on the line of scrimmage. Like, that's where those guys play. Like, people play along the edge and have that explosiveness and leverage that explosiveness along the edge. But still, with him, I think the biggest thing is reps. I mean, I think he only has his fewer than 200 plays in his college career where he's been in coverage. And he's, you know, still learning. Like, RPOs make that difficult. Screens and the emphasis on the shallow passing game makes that difficult at the collegiate level. Like, how can you win at the linebacker position, especially at his size, despite being a former five-star recruit? How can you win against some of these concepts in coverage? And I think him identifying that and Penn State putting him in a position to succeed in that area, I think, is going to be the biggest thing.
Quickly on two guys that, because I want to get to a couple other things that I think are super interesting with Penn State this year. Rasheed Walker, James Franklin has said the light finally has come on for him, and he gets it now going into what should be his senior year, whatever you want to call it now with COVID. What do you see from Walker as far as his baseline before that? And if he did, if the light has come on, what do you see his ceiling as a guy who is looking at the 2021 NFL draft as well?
Yeah, it's tough. I haven't watched a ton of Walker. I know this past season he graded well, over a 70.0 PFF grade this past year. Good size at 6'6", 310. I'm interested to see, you know, more reps in pass protection. You haven't seen that from him. He hasn't been a next-level blocker in the run game as either. I think you're looking for more high-end in his game. And what's tough, too, is this past year, especially in the Big Ten, you know, you saw very few opportunities to go against legitimate high-end pass rushing talent. Like, a lot of guys were either opted out or not playing this year. And I think that concerns me as well. You know, something that Mike and I on the podcast talk about a ton is you want to see your, you know, the players you're evaluating do it against NFL caliber competition. You just haven't really seen that a ton from him. There's opportunities to grade better in pass protection, opportunities to grade better as a run blocker. But with a lot of these guys, and I know he's a three-year guy that's had experience with Penn State compared to the other guys we've talked about, you just need to see more. And offensive line, that position, because, and I think a lot of it is because of how big you have to get. Like, you have to be a rare human being in this planet to be a good offensive lineman. I think that takes time. That takes legitimately age and development. I do think you rarely see these offensive linemen break out until their fourth, fifth years of college. And then even in the NFL, you rarely see them even expand on that until their second or third years. Tristan Wirfs isn't walking through that door. He is one of the most rare people the NFL has really ever seen. And he's had a lot of success already in his NFL career. But oftentimes, these offensive linemen don't really hit their stride until year three, year four. Like, I think a really good example is DJ Humphreys, former Florida offensive tackle that a lot of people like, drafted in the first round by Arizona. And he did not really hit his stride until fourth or fifth year. And now you could argue he's a top 15 tackle in the NFL. Like, again, this is a position that takes time to develop. So when you see guys like Penei Sewell or Tristan Wirfs or Quentin Nelson, guys that like really break out at a very young age, like breakout age is more often used for wide receiver, but still, when you see like offensive linemen have a significant success at a young age, when they are behind the maturity curve, that matters. And I think you haven't seen that from him yet, but that doesn't mean that it just means the jury is still out.
Austin Gale from 2-for-1 Drafts podcast with us. We're talking about the Penn State football players to watch for in 2021, guys that PFF is interested in. Of course, we talked a little bit about Sean Clifford, and that's what everyone wants to know. So I keep getting asked, is Sean Clifford good? And, you know, looking at his tape, the answer I think is obvious, but then can he be good is a different question. The 2021 college football ELO rankings came out. I believe it was early this week or late last week. Can you explain what the ELO rankings are quickly? Because I want to get into how Sean Clifford and all of that plays into what you guys are seeing from Penn State in 2021.
Yeah, so PFF's ELO rankings, and ELO is not something that's specific to PFF. ELO is a way to look at multiple factors that contribute all to one ranking and put them together to, you know, have a ranking, you know, have all these contributing factors to winning football games and winning national championships at the collegiate level and putting that at a percentage probability, you know, because there's a range of outcomes for everything. You know, there's no one team that's solidified as a certain rank, but right now this is where you're seeing their probability to win the championship or go the distance is where they're at right now. So I do think ELO rankings do a good job of bringing in PFF grades, bringing in market odds, bringing in these different things that actually impact how a team's going to perform in the upcoming season. I think that's where ELO all factors in.
So you talk about a range of outcomes, and Penn State is in the 20s in the ELO rankings, but they have a 0.0% chance to win the national championship. So to quote Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying there's not a chance.
But I do think that the 0.0 is going to get like overhyped. Every team has a 0.0%. No, it has a percentage chance to win the national championship. But how many zeros are after that? Probably a decent amount. Because obviously there's significant favorites that will win this. They have to win the Big Ten. They have to, you know, go into the college football playoff. And I think a lot of that is Sean Clifford. Like, this is not – he has not been a quarterback that has played well above expectation to the point where he can compete in the Big Ten or for a national title. You look at this past season, just a 60.9 PFF passing grade, only 5 big-time throws. And big-time throws at PFF are these highly graded throws, these rare throws that you see down the football field. Only 1.9% of his attempts this past year were big-time throws, those highly positively graded throws. That's a concern. Meanwhile, turnover-worthy play rate has maintained over 3% over the past 2 seasons. Not where you want to be.
Yeah.
Not only is he conservative, not only is he missing on some of these bigger, long-term, like longer-distance throws, but he's also turning the ball over at a clip that you don't want to see, especially for a quarterback that is as conservative as he is. You know, a 9.3 average step to target this past season. They are not asking him to be Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, but at a certain point, if you want this offense to have significant success, he needs to push the ball downfield. He needs to find ways to move that. And I think you look at this past season too, he had 3 big-time throws against Indiana. After that, he only had 1 for the rest of the season. Like, yep. That, again, is a huge concern. He needs to be more consistent pushing the ball downfield with success.
Yeah, and a lot of those too were late in games where the game was already gone. So what's there to do but risk it? So you mentioned the average depth of target and the conservatism of the offense last year. Mike Yurcich brought in this offseason to fix that. I don't know how much you've studied his offenses or just, you know, the Big 12 offenses in depth, but what can he do? What can the offense do to tease that sort of more aggressiveness and downfield passing out of Sean Clifford? How can you get to a position where Clifford is a guy that can get you somewhere?
I do think it is, you know, you can't afford, there are limitations with Sean Clifford, but you can't afford to let them limit your offense and force your offense to be more conservative. Like, you need to chase explosive plays. I was talking to PJ Fleck, I think yesterday or the day before, about, like, you know, his approach to the RPO heavy offense. They run RPOs at the highest rate of any Power 5 team in the NFL. And a lot of it is that they feel they can chase explosive plays, a high percentage of completions with RPOs. And they do. I mean, it's an offense that has been explosive, even with Tanner Morgan, a guy that isn't one of the top quarterbacks in the Big Ten compared to Michael Penix and some of these other guys. I do think they need to find creative ways to go get those explosive plays. Because if it's not going to come from Sean Clifford and you're going to kind of put the training wheels on him and not ask him to push the ball downfield, I mean, you look down the stretch, average depth of targets in single games are under 7 for a lot of those games down the stretch. Like, he is not pushing the ball downfield. And that's fine. If you don't want to do that, if you want to put the training wheels on Sean Clifford, that's fine. But you need to get creative elsewhere to go get those explosive plays. Because if you're not gaining chunk yardage at the collegiate level or at the NFL level, it can become so difficult to sustain drives and put up enough points to win.
Yeah, and last year, I've brought up this stat before on the show. The only team that had more design quarterback runs than Penn State last year, if you combine Sean Clifford and Will Levis, was Army. So it was rough football to watch for Penn State football fans. I think that there's going to be a clear difference in that. And the question is just, can Sean Clifford operate the offense? There are times it looks like he's a quarterback. And if you talk to him, he's a guy that I think knows all the answers. I think he knows all the football answers. It's just literally translating them to the field is a huge thing for Sean, because it's post-snap. What is he seeing? Does he know what he's seeing? And how does he adjust? When it comes to first and second reads, for quarterbacks in college, how rare or common is it for guys to get to that second read and to have that maturity about them with as much training wheels as there is in college football with some, you know, all the screens and design throws and things like that?
I think it's rare. It reminds me of a conversation I had with JT O'Sullivan, who does a lot of good work on YouTube with his QB school and also as a former quarterback in the NFL. He talks about there are some guys, some quarterbacks, whether it's at the collegiate level or the NFL level, that have it. They have that mental capability, that capacity to take more. And the guys that you can just keep throwing plays at and keep throwing progressions at, they can just continue to take. And there's others where you don't have that, where there isn't that capability, that mental capacity to handle that workload or that play count load or whatever it may be. I think it's up to Penn State to identify that with Sean Clifford. If he is a guy that can handle more, getting more creative with the playbook and getting more creative with what his strengths are, I think makes sense. But if he's not, then you do have to simplify this offense. You do have to do a lot of QB, you know, QB runs and that type of stuff to, again, grind out some of these points and try and make some plays.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. When you're leaning on the QB run game, it's a crutch. It's something that you're doing because you can't operate higher concepts and things like that. So, reshaping the quarterback roster is something that Penn State's been trying to do for a couple of years. I mean, they were in on Justin Fields early, and then you see when you don't get a guy like that, where you end up. So quickly, and we'll transition now to something on the 2-for-1 Drafts podcast that came up a little bit ago. You and Mike Renner were talking about second-year breakout candidates, guys that are going to, in their second year in the NFL, have take a step forward. And you brought up Yetur Gross-Matos, defensive end for the Carolina Panthers. What are your expectations of a second-year breakout? What does that mean to you when it comes to either statistics or PFF grade or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to see more efficiency as a pass rusher. I do think that so much of the conversation about Yetur Gross-Matos coming out is that he's raw. Like, he just like didn't play the same position a ton. You're still trying to identify like where he's best utilized. I think they want to use Derek Brown in Carolina as that nose tackle type, and maybe use Yetur Gross-Matos as a three technique in some areas, but also as an edge player. I think he needs to hone into the position that he's going to play, and then also identify clear cut primary and secondary pass rush moves. Like, you cannot flail in the NFL. You can't have, you know, you can't not have a plan. Like, I think Mike and I talk about it in that same podcast, that at the college level, if you are a freak athlete or a technician, you can have a lot of success as a pass rusher. In the NFL, you have to have freak athleticism and be a technician if you want to be that good. I think you saw that with Khalil Mack. You see that with Von Miller. You see that with TJ Watt. Like, those guys are athletes and they're technicians. They have primary, secondary, and tertiary moves. And that is where Yetur Gross-Matos needs to get. Because the athleticism, the length, the tools, they're there. I think he can add to those by becoming more of a technician as a pass rusher and refining that technique.
I always thought from a physical standpoint, he lacked that top end burst to be like a franchise guy, which is why I thought Carolina in the second round was a perfect spot for him with Brian Burns on the other side, a guy who does have that clear cut, you know, and I know you were a fan of his coming out of Florida State in the draft with those clear cut moves, speed to the edge. Do you think that he can be a multi, you know, double digit sack a year guy, a 60 pressure a year guy, or is he going to always be that second pass rusher that is on the team with another guy that's the lead pass rusher?
I don't foresee him being that like tier one pass rusher. I do think he's more of a tweener, and he's going to be a guy that is more of a rotational piece. I do think he could have a lot of success though. Like, I do think that there were some times last year where you felt good about his production. He could be a consistent contributor.
Last thing I want to get to, because I want to get you out of here. I know you've been in meetings all day, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Austin Gale from 2-for-1 Drafts and PFF. Penn State had two players, speaking of pass rushers, in the first round. Micah Parsons goes to the Dallas Cowboys. The number of times that Dan Quinn mentioned packages and sub-packages in his post-draft press conference, I mean, it sounded like he was working for Amazon, truthfully. From a scheme fit and from a fit perspective, Adafe Owe, Micah Parsons, who do you think found the best situation for their skills to, you know, not put them in bad situations where they're asked to do something that they're not? Because I think both guys did have clear roles and fits based on what their skill sets were and what they put on tape.
I do think both those guys landed in really good situations. We've talked a lot about Odafe Owe going to Baltimore, a place that has done a very good job at grooming and developing edge talent in the NFL, with guys like Za'Darius Smith, Matthew Judon, even Tyus Bowser signing a decent second-year deal after his rookie contract. Like, they have done such a good job. Calais Campbell, like, they develop talent along the defensive line. I think you're going to see Odafe Owe get so much better in Baltimore. Maybe it doesn't happen in year one, but year two, year three, I really do think you start to see him have success. And Parsons, in a good situation, I think the reason, you know, Quinn's at packages is they have so many linebackers.
How many? Like nine?
Keanu Neal is going to play linebacker for this team. Micah Parsons, Jabril Cox, Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, all guys that would start for other teams. And they run a lot, want to run a lot of varying two linebacker packages depending on down and distance and situation. And that level of versatility at the linebacker position, we could all say, is very rare. Like, what they're going to ask Micah Parsons to do, I think, is going to be a very versatile role. He's going to be fresh. He's going to be ready to go. I think on passing downs, you can see him be on the line of scrimmage. It's going to be interesting because I do think Dan Quinn has been given a gift. Micah Parsons is a gift. How he utilizes him is going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think that's one thing Penn State fans still are a little bit upset about, is they never got to see that high-end, consistent send Micah Parsons after the quarterback. It always seemed like Penn State was trying to teach him linebacker and then unleash that later, and then 2020 happened. So we get to see it at the NFL level with the Dallas Cowboys. Austin Gale, 2-for-1 Drafts podcast. You are thinking about changing the name, or is that happening? What's the deal there?
Still up in the air. We are going through some conversations right now internally, and also getting some feedback from the listeners to change the name. Potentially, we've got a rebrand coming along the way. Should be a lot of fun.
So check them out wherever you get your podcasts. Austin Gale, Mike Renner, 2-for-1 Drafts podcast. Austin, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.